As the months passed, and Putin's authoritarian retrenchment spread from media to oil deals to the direct suppression of democratic opposition, Bush and all of his advisors realized, sheepishly, that they had drunk the Kool-Aid a little, as Don Evans told his colleagues. Global oil prices rose, Russia's government profited, and felt less pressure to change. The Bush team concluded that, as soon as Putin realized that rising global oil prices meant he did not need American or European capital to finance improvements in the oil sector, he reverted to autocracy. After Evans left Bush's cabinet in 2005, his telephone rang at his office in Midland, Texas, where he had returned. German Greff, his former counterpart in the Commercial Energy Dialogue, during the years of optimism, told him that Vladimir Putin would like him to fly to Moscow for a visit. Evans agreed. He found Putin alone in his office, except for his interpreter. "I would like you to be chairman of Rosneft," Putin said. Rosneft was one of Russia's largest state-controlled oil companies, the one Lee Raymond had examined and rejected on the grounds that it was a political labyrinth. Igor Sechin, the former leader of the Kremlin Silovikia, with which Mikhail Khodorkovsky had tangled, now served as an influential figure at the company. He was a beefy man with short, cropped hair. Evans said that he was flattered and that he would think about it. He flew back to Midland. Putin called Bush to tell him about the job offer he had made. This was the Putin they had all underestimated in 2001, the KGB man whose idea of how to build an oil partnership with the United States was to provide a lucrative job to one of the American president's best friends at the head of a Russian oil company heavily influenced by the Kremlin. Putin's offer also suggested ambivalence. He wanted both control and international credibility. Evans thought about the offer for a few days, but never spoke to Bush about it. Some friends told him he was crazy to even think about it. Others advised that he give it serious consideration. Evans told his friends that he did think a more globally integrated Russian energy industry could spur economic growth worldwide. He was also mindful of appearances. Gerhard Schroeder, the former chancellor of Germany, had embarrassed himself and his country by accepting a position on the board of Gazprom, the Russian gas giant, days after he left political office. He created the appearance that he and Germany were being paid off by Putin. After a short period of reflection, Evans decided that working for Rosneft was not for him. He telephoned Sechin, thanked him, but said he would have to decline. Later, John Snow, Bush's second Treasury secretary, found himself in a meeting with Putin, where the subject of the job offer to Evans came up. Putin marveled at Evans's refusal. "You know," he told Snow, "if he had taken that, you could have cut your CIA budget in half." Putin misunderstood the American system as much as American analysts misunderstood him. Russian oil companies cut their deals from a position that was clearly subordinate to the state. In Putin's worldview, the recruitment of a Bush friend like Evans to Rosneft made perfect sense. The converse proposition, the idea that ExxonMobil would recruit a Putin consigliere to its senior-most executive ranks in Irving in order to solidify U.S.-Russian relations, was highly unlikely. ExxonMobil had never been an arm of the Bush administration's Russia reset after 2001, events had demonstrated. It was a private, global empire that would choose to align with Bush or not, as its enduring interests required.